Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome to another edition of News and Views. Thanks for joining us. A new report released from the Youth Justice Project finds the juvenile justice system is failing over 12,000 impacted children. Despite major policy advances like Raise the Age in 2017, North Carolina has a long way to go to ensure that all young people, especially youth of color, are treated fairly and equitably in our juvenile justice system. Joining us this week to discuss the report is Ricky Watson, co-director of the Youth Justice Project. Well, thanks for being back with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, first, let's talk about what you were trying to find out in the report. What prompted you to take a look at what's happening to our kids?
This report is rooted in the Juvenile Justice Reinvestment Act. We first want to acknowledge that North Carolina has taken some much-needed first steps to do the right thing for youth here in the state. But it's really recognition that we need to improve our juvenile system before we increase the amount of youth that are going to be seeing it. Like I said, we think that the Juvenile Justice Reinvestment Act is a step in the right direction. We think it's smart on crime. We think it's evidence-based. We think it's rooted in science and of the adolescent brain development. And we believe that generally the results are more appropriate consequences for youth in the juvenile system, but we want to make sure that it's adequately prepared and continuously improving so that it can handle this new influx of 16 and 17-year-olds that are going to be going to the juvenile rather than the adult criminal system.
Before we get into sort of what you found in the report, folks in North Carolina have been working to raise the age for a long time. How significant a reform is that just overall?
So it was a great win for many advocates, many that have come way before me. Essentially, the law as it stood was virtually 100 years old, and folks have been really pushing to try to change this law for decades now. And to see some movement on this issue in the right direction, I think advocates are definitely very pleased and optimistic as to the improved outlooks and outcomes for youth.
All right, let's talk about what the report found that are some barriers to helping kids the way we ought to be helping kids. One of them is, you say, developmentally inappropriate limits on juvenile court jurisdiction. What do you mean by that?
Well, first off, I think it's important to note that raising the age right now means that we still have essentially a little over 2 years before youth that are 16 and 17 are going to really see that benefit. This law doesn't take effect until then. But when we talk about what's developmentally appropriate and inappropriate, of the states that actually have a lowest age for when you can be sent into juvenile court, North Carolina has the lowest at age 6. So essentially, we're sending 6-year-olds into the juvenile system. And we think that's far too early. We'd like to see that age increase to at least 10 years old. Also, Raise the Age is not an all kids, all crimes bill. So we're going to be missing certain youth that are accused of certain lower level felonies. Essentially, if you're accused of an A through a G felony and traffic offenses, you're basically going to be continue to be handled in adult court. And we think that those are improvements that we could also see made before Raise the Age takes effect in December of 2019.
I'm not sure if this is in the report, but it just made me think of it when you were answering that question. What about kids who were convicted or are convicted now before this sort of goes into place, who are 16 and 17?
Yeah, absolutely. So unfortunately, kids that are convicted now, until then, they're going to fall into a gap, which is all the more reason why we need court alternatives implemented now across the state. Some jurisdictions across the state have done a really good job of implementing programs called misdemeanor diversion programs, which act to prevent a youth from acquiring a charge on their criminal record and diverts them into programs that are developmentally appropriate and gets them services and treatment if necessary, but also addresses whatever behavior might have occurred. But essentially, folks that don't have that luxury or benefit of a misdemeanor diversion program are going to still continue to be processed and handled in the adult criminal system. And that's one of the gaps that we see that we'd love to be addressed.
I guess that transitions to the next question I have, which you raise, are demographic and geographic disparities. So obviously all counties or all jurisdictions don't have those diversion programs.
Absolutely. We see those as first off a stopgap before or until Raise the Age, but we also see them as a productive measure to keep youth that don't necessarily need as much court involvement and interaction long term. We'd love to see more of those programs implemented.
Do we still have a racial gap in how we treat kids in the juvenile justice system?
Unfortunately, we do. We have a large racial gap. We also have a large gender gap. Unfortunately, if you are Black and male, you are more likely to be involved in the justice system. Also, if you have a disability, you're also more likely to be involved in the juvenile system. But essentially, yeah, African-American youth, while they accounted for about 24% of the population under age 18, they were subjected to about 49% of delinquency complaints and about 63% of detention center admissions across the state. And unfortunately, the most severe youth development center commitments, they accounted for about 76% of those. there's a large disparity with both racial and gender demographics.
One thing you raised that I hadn't thought of before the report is the issue of inadequate representation in juvenile court. You don't hear a lot about who represents juveniles.
Absolutely. And this goes back to the jurisdictional element. While there are certainly great defenders across the state who are part of the public defender's offices, there are also a lot of court-appointed attorneys who don't necessarily receive the same benefits and trainings and opportunities that those juvenile defenders have. So naturally, you're going to see some differences in how cases are handled. Juvenile cases are not handled in the same way that adult cases are handled, and rightfully so. We believe that proper and appropriate training is really essential. This also works for judges. If judges haven't had that proper training in how to respond and work with young people, they're going to be missing a key piece of the whole purpose of juvenile court, which is really to be more rehabilitative than it is harmful and punitive in nature. So yes, absolutely. Our state is essentially as varied in terms of jurisdictions and what you see across the state as we are counties in this state. There's a lot of wiggle room there that we'd like to see kind of more streamlined.
You also raised the issue about ways that kids actually are sort of pushed into the criminal justice system, the court system, including things that happen at school. There's been a big debate about school resource officers or police officers at school and the suspension rate and when suspensions turn into arrests. How big a problem is sort of the where kids come from when they end up in the system?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, far too often, because teachers and administrators don't really have the resources and tools that they need, we find that juvenile court can sometimes become a dumping ground for those schools to kind of address or deal with their problems in a way that they think is most effective. This essentially burdens and stresses the court and makes it difficult to serve the youth who truly need services and appropriate supervision. So essentially, you're sending and diverting kids who probably just need to talk with a counselor and probably, you know, need to try to get into the root of what their behavioral issues are, rather than being referred to a court system. And unfortunately, oftentimes administrators and teachers handle or address and divert these kids into the court system. And that's kind of where we see a problem. And we'd like to see our schools strengthened and improved in that way so that they have more resources to adequately address behavior in school.
Finally, before I let you go, I wonder what your message to policymakers or what you hope they'll take from this report. It does seem, understandably, that a lot of folks are thrilled that we finally raise the age and join the rest of the country in how we treat kids. But I guess that's more of a beginning than an end.
Absolutely. I think that this is all just a really great beginning. Youth are still going to be continuing to face all the harmful consequences of being in the adult system until we see Raise the Age actually take effect in 2019. We've got roughly 2 years before that happens. And in the meantime, you know, people need to be mindful of those consequences that exist, even if they are handled in the juvenile system. What I'd like to see happen is folks really concentrate on strengthening and improving our juvenile system so that we can avoid, you know, kids having to deal with some of those harmful collateral consequences and hopefully find them on the right track. If we can really come up with positive solutions to some of the issues that we have now, we'd be better off at decreasing some of these disparities, and we'd really have some better outcomes for our youth.
Well, thank you very much for doing this report and the work you're doing. It's very important. We appreciate you being with us. Thanks for your time.
I appreciate you having me.
Up next, the state response to the deadly opioid epidemic. Stay tuned.